Log Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Good evening. Welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2512. This is 2512. I'm Carol Levine, and I will be running this show tonight. And we have Sharon Higdon-Jones on, and I always like when Sharon comes on. She is a licensed psychotherapist, and she has been for over 35 years. And I see that she's here now. I'm going to bring her on in a second. We also have Lori from Calgary. She's my co-host tonight. We have, like, co-hosts and then co-hosts, and we have hosts. These nights are Tuesdays and Thursdays. I don't know. But you know, the point is, don't be afraid to call in. If you have any questions, a lot of people are going through depression now. They're going through, I'm getting crazy calls at 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning because people are depressed, okay? And they're scared, and all kinds of things happening. And the post-traumatic stress disorder is really at a high level right now because of things that are happening in our world. But do not give up, because I always say that this too shall pass, and it will pass. Before I bring on Sharon, I just want to read out the statement here that we have, the mission statement. It says, we have a single purpose at NASCA to address issues related to child abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent and physical abuse, emotional trauma, and neglect. And we do so two different ways. Okay, two different ways. Number one, educating the public, and that is especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing child abuse, of sexual abuse especially. Okay. And then number two, offering hope and healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse. That's what we do. We have a lot of services out there for adult survivors, and we also do our best to work for the children, okay? We have all kinds of people out there working to try to help, say, you know, change laws and so forth. And we also, this is a part of involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. That, too, is very, very important. So anyway, that's only a little bit of what we do here at NASCA. And I want to make it a little bit clear, too, that when I say that we have programs, you know, for adult survivors of child abuse, we do have those programs. We are worldwide. And those programs, if you look on the NASCA website, www.nasca.org, nasca.org, okay? Type that into your browser. You'll get our website. And scroll down just a little bit, and you'll come to the red blocks. I call them blocks for lack of better wording. And they're menus. Each one has a menu. All the way over on the left-hand side, okay, on the left-hand side is programs. And those programs it's alphabetical. We serve the United States and also other countries, okay? Not many, but other countries. But we are worldwide. So that's what the contact page is for also, okay, people out there. That's why I get these, you know, calls in the AM. People call me, and I take them right to that program page. That's what I do, because that website is perfect, okay, for people. And I will say, and I'll get to the show, that I have received a lot of people who have emailed me or called me to say thank you, they found a program in their area where they live. Okay, so that's important. They are there, and I want people to know that this is one way, okay, only one way, of serving, you know, the adult survivors of child abuse. Okay, now with Sharon, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Thank you, Carol.
Yeah, I'm so happy that you're here.
I'm so happy you're here.
Yeah. You are a licensed psychotherapist, and you have been for over 35 years. So people out there, we have a licensed psychotherapist here. And if you have any questions, you know, that are bothering you, things that you need some clarification for, or, you know, you're just feeling bad or whatever, tonight is the perfect night to call in. Because we are all, you know, people that have been through so much, some more than others. We don't take a yardstick, okay? We don't do this. But what we do is we help guide you, you know, and help you, and you're not alone. So don't feel funny about calling in. The number is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118, okay? If you call that number, you can come on and ask Sharon anything that you'd like to, you know, about recovery or whatever's on your mind, okay? So anyway, Sharon, how are you? How have you been?
I'm good. I was very interested in what you had to say, Carol, about receiving so many calls lately about people being depressed, scared, and PTSD things coming up, because I think a lot of people are going through the whole fatigue of not only the pandemic, but just things that are going along around the world. And I think that what happens when we get so tired and worn down, right, our defenses go down, and I think some stuff then comes up. So I just want to say thank you on behalf of all the people who've called you, and you've been there available to take their calls. That's so important to know that there's somebody there, that we're not alone, and that's really what tonight, I guess, is about too. It's about not being alone. But I'm feeling some of the fatigue too, the adjusting to the new normal, and you know, and wondering when things are going to change and be different. So, you know, I can relate to some of that. And I can certainly relate to certain things coming up and so on that you think are kind of dormant, right? They're kind of laying there and taking care of themselves. And then you go through something like this and things come up. And I know with my clients, a lot of relationship issues coming up because people are spending a lot of time together, maybe more than they expected to, and there's no place to go, right? And family issues, and of course, we all know about the level of going up. But you know, it's a real test for partnerships and marriages right now too. So
it absolutely is.
Yeah.
I mean, I get phone calls even about. I'm laughing. I shouldn't be laughing. But I do these things. But anyway, you know, I get phone calls at times where the fact that everyone is crammed together, you know, in one dwelling, okay, the kids, the parents, you know, it is bringing on a lot of stress. And you see so many things on TV, you know, with the masks and all these things, and then you hear the numbers of the hot spots, as they call it, you know, with the pandemic. People do get very frightened. And it is a frightening thing because, you know, when we have our wars, you can see what you're fighting, okay? Mm-hmm. But when you have something like a pandemic, you can't see it. But you do, you know, you do many times. Unfortunately, there's a lot of people, you know, who did come down with the pandemic. You know, they came down with COVID and all this other stuff. Right now, I want to say thank you, too. I've received a lot of emails and some phone calls. I had eye surgery. That's why I've been on. The mouth hasn't been here for 8 days. I think it's been 8 days. I don't know. Something like that. And because I'm recovering from eye surgery, but I'm doing well. And so I'm back on. And I kind of missed it. And yet I kind of like the attention my kids gave me. That was fun. But mommy can be spoiled a little bit. That was all right. So, but anyway, yeah, there's a lot of issues out there.
Yeah,
What's that?
I'm glad you're doing well with your eye surgery. I was going to ask how you were doing, and I didn't want to overstep a boundary, right, to ask. But I know oftentimes, so it's good to know that you're doing okay. It's good to know you're being spoiled. And it's also important to know that, and I don't know if this is true for you, but for so many people who have any kind of abuse in their history, oftentimes going through physical things can be really tough, you know, being a lot of control or turning yourself over. There's a multitude of issues there. So I've been thinking about you, Carol, so I'm glad you're doing okay.
Well, I'm doing a lot better. I will say, and this is so strange, the floor seems like it's only a foot away. And I thought to my God, have I shrunk? You know, what's going on here? You know, I'm thinking, whoa, you know, I'm looking at the floor and it's too close to me. And I go, oh, no. But that's all a part of it, you know. So I'm taking meds 3 times a day. And I might even be a little loopy. I can't help that. That's all right. And, it's all a part of it. So I'm glad. And I see that Bill has called in also. Hold on a second. Let me get him on. Hey, Bill. How you doing?
Hi, Carol. I'm doing okay. I just want to reassure Sharon that Carol doesn't have many boundaries and she loves talking about herself. So don't worry about that, Sharon.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Good
to know. I'm trying to learn a little boundaries. Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
Wow.
But I can talk about this. I know you're just busting me. He and I bust each other all the time. But I usually win. That's where I'm going.
I saw that there weren't any other panelists yet, so I decided I better call in and fill out the group a little bit, and hopefully encourage others to call in too, because Sharon's a wonderful guest. You're a great guest, Sharon, and we have you every month, and it's a shame for people to miss the opportunity to engage with you, maybe ask you a question or ask you to talk about a certain topic or a theme, and that's what we're doing here tonight. There's no set topic, so anybody who calls in can present one, you know, or maybe bring something up they'd like to hear discussed or ask a question. And anyway, Sharon, you're so gracious and wonderful about donating your time. I mean, you've gushed over Carol. That's enough of that. I want to talk about you for a little bit. Okay.
Oh, see, he's down in Florida. He can say all these things. I'm in New Jersey.
There you go.
Oh, boy.
I'd say the same thing about Lori, who's also with us tonight. She's, you know, one of our oldest friends and had some difficulties over the last few years, but now is back and, back with kind of full force back. And we're really delighted to have her on the show. And now she's going to start hosting. She's been trailing, but she's going to do a little of each. And we can't say enough about Lori either. So everybody here, except me, you know, I want to gush about and say, you know, it takes a lot of volunteers to do this. And I hope the listener out there will take advantage of it by simply calling in. And I know Carol will be announcing the phone number a few times tonight. But anyway, thank you for being here tonight.
Well, thank you, Bill. Yeah. I'm glad to be here.
And is this all a lead-in for us to gush about Bill now and talk about how wonderful he is, right?
No.
I could write a book about Bill. Are you kidding me? It's been 11 years. Oh, my God.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Yeah. Thank God for the availability. Yes.
Let me ask you something. Do you have your speaker on or something?
I have earphones that will plug in. Why? Are you getting a noise? Or?
Yeah, I'm getting feedback. That's on my phone. I might have to change phones again, so I'm trying to figure out before we get going here. Okay, well, we'll see what happens
here. She sounds good. She sounds good.
Now
over
she
here.
Sounds good. Yeah. It was just a minute ago.
I
don't know.
Yeah. I have some good news. I could share a little piece of good news since we're all gushing, right? I just found out last week that Healing Steps was, you know, my book was just named as one of the top 15 books on Kindle nonfiction for 2020. So that was pretty exciting. I didn't know, and somebody called and
let me know that.
And so I was very, thank you. I was very, very excited about it, because what it means is that people are accessing it and hopefully finding some help and support. But yeah, so that was kind of good news. That was good news.
No, that's wonderful news. Well, you know what it is? See, she has this, and I love this. I love this idea. She has a workbook. I remember speaking, I guess it was last month to you or whatever it was, about your book. It's called Healing Steps, A Gentle Path to Recovery for Survivors of Childhood Sexual Abuse. And, you know, it's wonderful. I love it when people write, you know, they write workbooks. Because, you know, we're on our healing journey. This is what we are. We're on our healing journey. Some of us are further along than other people. Doesn't matter. The point is that when you get on your healing journey, you need guidance, okay? And like in the middle of the night, if you're not reaching out and calling people like me, the night owl or whatever, you have a book in front of you that you can sit and look at, and you can ponder it, and you can absorb it. And you see, that's important, Sharon. I like that, okay? Mm-hmm. We've had other people on, too, that have written, you know, the type of book that you have, too. And let me tell you something. There are many times in the nighttime, people, they wake up, either they've had a terrible nightmare, or maybe they can't go to sleep. Like me, I'm the night owl, right? I walk the floors. Hey, listen, that's fine. That's the way I am. I got used to the graveyard shift many years ago when I started working the graveyard shift up until 95, and then I became a landlady. And I was up then, too, believe me. You get to really know people when you're a landlord. Oh, we get a bad rap, okay, we do. But anyway, there are good landlords out there. But anyway, the point is this. When it's like 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, everything seems creepy anyway. You know, everything seems magnified. It does. And if you're having, you know, sort of flashbacks or, your mind is racing, my mind does that a lot because I'm hypervigilant. And, you know, whatever the case might be, you need some guidance or you need to sit down. Maybe you've tried having, you know, a cup of tea. I'm not going to say coffee. That would keep some people up. Me, it puts me to sleep, but I always was different, you know. But, you know, the point is you need something to turn to. So a workbook is really very good because you're able to look at your problem and also get advice about your problem, and you can sit and take your time and ponder it, like I said before. So, yeah. I'm not surprised, you know, that you've done so well, and I think it's very much needed. So kudos to you.
Thank you very much. And you know, I agree with what you, well, I agree with all of what you said, but I agree with what you said about having something to connect with at those times when you are alone or those times that can be frightening, during the night. And we all know that, you know, when you have abuse in your history, that the night times can be really pretty rough, either because of having to be vigilant, because so many things do happen at night, but also because that's when the time your defenses are down and some memories and feelings and unresolved issues come flooding up. And the idea, and what I wanted to do in the book, was to write it as if you were sitting there and the two of us were having a conversation and talking about various aspects. And hopefully in the book there is the support and so on, as well as, and I really want to do a shout out to the many women who shared some of their stories and their own struggles with healing from abuse. Because, you know, I have to say that when I contacted them all and said, would you mind, and they wrote in their own words, probably sharing more deeply than I would have asked them to share, because they felt it was so important that they shared the nitty gritty, because that's where we all meet, isn't it? I mean, we all meet at that level in our healing process. And so they were willing to do that. And I'm so grateful that, and they share their struggles, they share their empowerment, And they shared some of their process and so on. So hopefully it's like sitting down at 2 o'clock in the morning and sitting there with a couple of friends that understand and can hear you and have walked a similar journey. You know, all our journeys are different, but we certainly meet in different places along the way. So thank you for mentioning that. But I think it is important to know you're not alone. And for everybody, all of us are not able to have therapy. Some of us don't have support groups. Some of us haven't learned about NAPSCA yet, which I hope we certainly do. And over tonight, if some people are listening and don't know, they can go and look resources. But it's so important to know you're not living through the healing process in a dark void like you went through when you were going through having the actual events of the abuse occur, you know, because that was such a lonely time for most of us. Regardless of what age you are, because it's, you know, we all know it's shrouded in secrecy and shame and so on, and you know, it's a dark time. So to be able to put a little light on that and to say you're not alone, you know, there's always somebody that is walking along beside you, whether it's through the written word, whether it's listening to some of the shows that are on NASCA, whether it's looking at the written word on the website or reaching out, calling you, Carol, at 2 o'clock in the morning. I mean, it's really nice to know that there's somebody there that can walk with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. What I try to do is that when it is in the a.m., by the time they get off the phone with me, they're laughing, okay? I try to lift people up that way because when they do call, and boy, I do get some. Sometimes I get barraged with phone calls. When they do call, they're so down because of what it is they're suffering from, you know. And so to bring them back up through laughter, through humor, I think that humor is a good thing. It's a good thing. And I used to love Robin Williams. I thought he was fantastic. And, you know, I don't understand why he ended up like that. But anyway, the point is because, you know, he hung himself. And that was awful. We don't know his life, do we? But, you know, the point is, yeah. But, well, many times the clown, you turn it upside down. And what do you have? You have the frown. I'm a clown. I love to laugh and I love to make people laugh. You know, if they get to know me and be comfortable with me, they see that part of me, okay? And so what people do is I try to lift them up, certainly discuss their problems. But on the other hand, let's find some humor in here. What can I do? What can I do? And they end up at the end of the night, you know, whether it's sometimes on the phone for 2 to 3 hours with someone. And, you know, they feel so much more comforted. But if they don't know to call, then if they have a workbook, something to give them guidance, okay, to that they can, you know, it helps them to understand because you explain in your workbooks why you're having such feelings, why this, why that. And believe me, I've been on my healing journey for many years, but I can all of a sudden, bang, just like that, get really, really mad, okay? I have an anger issue with the people that, you know, that I felt destroyed me as I was a child. Yeah. And I ended up going, you know, in ways and directions that I shouldn't have. And until I came to my senses, okay, when I finally came to my senses, and, you know, then I was okay and I straightened my life out. But I had to grow myself up, Sharon. And so many of us had to, you know. And we make terrible mistakes. And then people start thinking in the middle of the night when they should be sleeping, you know, about the mistakes that they made and the things that they did. And sometimes we have to take responsibility for some of our own actions, too. And that's not fun, okay? But then I think about, you know, yeah, what got us there? I could think of quite a few things I did, you know. But you know, it's good to have people. And people out there, I'll give the number again. It's 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. And we have a wonderful guest on here tonight, as Bill had said. And she can answer many questions that you might have, okay? And so take advantage of that and give us a call. And, you know, I'm sure she can ease your mind. And maybe you should get the book. Everyone out there, get this book, Healing Steps, A Gentle Path to Recovery for Survivors of Childhood Sexual Abuse. Okay, this is really, it says written in a workbook format with exercises. It tells you what to do with those feelings that you have, okay, how to deal with them appropriately. And it can, I'm sure that's very calming, too, because if you're sitting there looking at a book and it's telling you what to do with these feelings that you have, then you don't feel alone, okay? It takes some of that aloneness feeling away from you. And that's why books like this are so horribly, you know, important. I'm an author. I wrote Panic Child, A Harrowing True Story of Sexual Abuse and Neglect. I only got one scathing review, and I know who she is. I'll just leave it at that, okay? And but the others were magnificent. I don't know these people, you know. My daughter-in-law, those two people I know. No, and my jeweler. Okay, those three people. But the rest of them, I don't know who those people are. And you know, it's a wonderful thing, you know, to get nice reviews and stuff like that. But let me say something. When you put a book down, like mine, and Lori has written books, I know this, and many of us write books, it's wonderful to know, you know, the ending and to know that there is hope, and there is hope after abuse. I want that clear, okay? Yeah. But on the other hand, but if you don't have, then what do you do with yourself? You finish the book. That's why workbooks are important, okay? That's my point. Yeah.
And if people can pick up the book after they have gone through and done some exercises and maybe they've skipped around, because what's really important, I mean, you brought up such an interesting issue when you were talking about forgiving yourself and so on, you know, and admitting to your own stuff. That's so important. And there's a section of the book on forgiveness, and it talks about, you know, is that even necessary to heal? Do you have to forgive the person? I mean, you know, that's a real controversial kind of an issue, and so on. Talked about that in many ways, but it's an important aspect of forgiveness is being able to forgive yourself. Because if you are like most of us, and I certainly am one, as we go through our life with whatever our wound is, the repercussions that we acted out a lot, right? I mean, we have anger, we have sadness, we have regret, we have sexual issues, whatever it happens to be. And if you're not embracing them and working with them and resolving them in some way, you're acting them out, right? And so they're out there. So I think a lot of us can stand wherever we are in our life and look back and go, oh, my God, yeah, I really did that. Mm-hmm. There's that one, too. Oh, yeah, there's that, right? We have those things along the way, and it's so important for us to be able to be accountable for that, to make it amends if we need to do that, but to embrace ourselves with compassion and understanding and going, well, of course I did that. You know, you were talking about anger. I mean, who amongst us that have been hurt by somebody else hasn't experienced anger? You know, anger is an energy. It needs expression somehow, right? And we all have to learn over time how to deal with that, you know, how to set boundaries, how to stand up for ourselves, how to deal with it in an appropriate way. But it's a tough one because we have a lot to be angry about, right?
You bet. You bet.
You know? Exactly.
I mean, I used to go out and get into fights, you know, beat people up. Well, I didn't always win, though, Sharon, okay?
You were scrappy.
You know, I remember a nice big black eye that I had. And that girlfriend, she was from Brooklyn. I was from Staten Island. She was from Brooklyn. She was tougher than me, I tell you. But, but I realized that, like fighting is not always the best way, you know, to handle things, not that way. I mean, I believe that people have a right, you know, a God-given right, you know, if someone's coming at you, to defend yourself. I don't care what the situation is, okay? You can defend yourself. I believe that. But to use anger and to go around fighting and getting into fights and getting into trouble, a lot of my friends went to juvie and all this other stuff that I ended up working in juvie. It made no sense, but that's what happened. Life is crazy. And, you know, the point is, you know, anger is not it's just going to bring you down. It's just going to bring you down, okay? I had so many years where I walked around in a circle. I'd make sure nobody was in the house, otherwise they'd think I was crazy because I was talking to myself. But anyway, I was walking around in a circle, and I was saying, I want to do this to this person, I want to do that to this person, I want to do this to that person, on and on it went. And finally, I just dropped to the floor. I got so tired of anger. I just felt like I couldn't even pick myself up. I just sat there. I did not cry. I was not allowed to cry. If I started to cry, I was put outside, okay? Didn't matter what the weather was either. And because that's a sign of weakness, all right? So, I mean, there's so many things that we deal with as survivors. So you mentioned something about, you know, with the boundaries. Bill mentioned boundaries, and you mentioned ways of other things, doing things. I turned into an athlete, and I ran until I would fall from that. But that was a better feeling, okay? That was like getting rid of built-up anxiety. And we as survivors, whether it be, you know, Lori or Bill, we have to find, you know, ways, you know, to live our lives. You know, we have to find ways and to control the deficiencies that we have within ourselves, whether it be brought on by other people or just from life itself. You know, we have to learn how to handle ourselves. And, you know, we're not perfect either, okay? So let's go to Lori here and see what she thinks about anger and how she handles, you know, the past of the things that happened to her, something that's positive to bring you up out of that gutter that we fall into, that rut.
Well, it's, as you're talking there, it's just all kinds of stuff was going through my mind. You know, that we all, many survivors can relate to. It's a difficult situation for sure. I know for sure the one thing that kind of sort of stays with me all the time is that I don't want to be my abusers. You know, my parents were my abusers and one of my brothers, and I don't want to be abusive to other people. So my anger was imploded. Like my anger stayed inside usually and never went anywhere. So it was sort of like I was ready to explode inward, more than outward, you know, like I tried to, you know, when I was a teenager and stuff, I had some out, you know, acted out as a teen and stuff and that sort of thing. But as I got older, especially my 20s into my 30s, it all sort of started to, I just kept it within myself because I didn't want to hurt people. I didn't want to be abusive and hurt people. I didn't like being hurt, and I certainly didn't want to go around hurting people or starting problems with people. But I didn't have any real, I wasn't even sure what to do with that anger, but I knew it was killing me. You know, the whole, just everything to do with the abuse was just ready to explode, and I knew it was going to be a problem. I wrote about it in my books that I wrote. And after my mom passed away is when I realized that I had this internal scream. I think it's because while my mom was living, I was always kind of hoping, you know, that there would be some, at some point she would tell me the things that I needed to hear, and, you know, she would make things right between me and herself. And then after she passed away, I realized that was never going to happen. And this, I started to have these nightmares. And before my mom passed away, I never had any flashbacks or nightmares or anything about the abuse. But after my mom passed away is when it all started, which I think is really interesting. I had a lot of, I realized I had so much anger, you know, so much hurt and so much anger. I started doing a lot of looking into it, just to understand why, you know, the reasoning and, you know, what is anger and why it happens that it would implode instead of, you know, explode sort of thing. But I think one of the biggest things that helped me out was doing this inner child work. And journaling as well. I did a lot of journaling. I wrote letters to my abusers, which were my two parents, and both my parents and one of my brothers. I wrote letters to them, and I told them exactly what I how they made me feel and what they did and was wrong, you know what I mean? And I tore them up, of course. But it felt good to be able to do that. And I actually did that visualization thing, you know, with them sitting in a chair. You know, they weren't there in the chair, but I was just visualizing all of this. And that I could tell them exactly what I felt and how much they had hurt me. And that really helped a lot. Lots of little things I did like that. Journaling was another big one, I said. And inner child work. I did a lot of inner child work with this program, Your Envisioned Mind, I was talking about before. I think on the last show that you were on, Sharon.
Yes.
This program is so it was very, very helpful. And I still have to go in and it's like a meditation program type thing for the limbic system. So it's all pictures, but these wounded inner children within me, I used to think that was very strange, but this friend of mine did the meditation with me, and we went around and rescued all of me at these different points of wounding where the abuse took place. And it was so helpful to be able to talk to myself and to tell myself at that age to try to comfort myself and to say, you know what, you're not alone. Because I realized that that part of me, that inner, that child that I was being abused, was still there. That child was still experiencing that abuse, and because nobody rescued me, there was no saving me. So it's kind of like, you know, most, that's what happens to survivors of abuse. I mean, if we make it, and
right.
So it was very helpful to.
Did we lose Lori? She had a little problem. Are you back?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay.
Are you there? She was having a little problem. She's she'll work on it. She'll get back on. She had a little problem earlier.
That's works otherwise normally.
Oh, there. Now you're back.
Yes. Go ahead. No, it can't. Now you sound like you're 50 miles away or something. Well, she is. I mean, look how far away she's in Canada. Say something. I can't hear her. Well, she'll work on it.
I would like to say something, if I might, about
go ahead.
That Lori said, because it's so right on target. And, Lori, good for you for doing all the things that you did, that doing that inner child work, it's so incredible. And, you know, you mentioned rescuing the child within. And absolutely, you know, that the child that holds all those feelings that we experience as we went through the abuse and is locked up has to be released and all of that dealt with. And anger has got to be expressed. And one of the things that that I really am so grateful to in terms of my work is I've also worked with a lot of children and adolescents who've been abused. And children, when they come in, I've learned so much from them because their anger is right there. You know, it's not buried. It's right there on the surface. And I would do sand tray work or play with them. We would do a lot of artwork and finger painting and so on. And they had no qualms about expression of their anger or anger at the perpetrator. I want to cut him. I remember a little boy going, I just want to hurt him. And I said, what do you want to do? And he picked up this boy doll, and he was doing in the sand tray box, which is a therapy thing where you make images in the sand. But he took this doll and he was hitting it on the edge. And I'm sitting there thinking, is that okay for me to let this go on? And he was really into it. And he did that until the hands broke off of the doll. And as soon as the hands broke off, he stopped and he put it down and he said, now I'm safe. I can stop. And it was like, wow. And what I really admired about him, his perpetrator was a man. And what I really admired was it was so raw and so present without any kind of filtering system, which is adults sometimes. We try to be so, refined about our anger. It's, you know, and our anger usually at a perpetrator is primitive. You know, it's not refined. It's not rational. It's not understood. It's not a lot of words strung together and presented. You know, it is that raw kind of anger. And I think when I would see children and I would watch how they would express it with their art, some of them actually in the book, but see how they would express that rawness that I think most of us can relate to. You know, when he sat there that day for 10 minutes, I didn't say where I just sat with him until those hands broke off. I still have those hands, by the way. I always kept them in a little thing on my desk afterwards. It just was such a reminder of how important it is, right, to take your power back, which is what he was doing. You know, the perpetrator to him was powerless now that the hands were, you know, broken off in a sense. But it was a metaphor for all of us wanting the importance of taking your power back, because as soon as he did that, he said, now I'm finished. And his sleep disorder that he was experiencing disappeared. I mean, all of that. But it's such a lesson for us and children in their way of being so close to their feelings, right, and not looking to have to correct themselves along the way, but can just be there. I mean, there's just a lot to be learned. And that is that inner child that holds those feelings in that way. So I believe very strongly, as Lori was talking about, with journaling and expressing and two chair work and doing crayons and finger paints, and I'm big ones with big fat markers and big tablets of paper. That's always what I've done, and I've saved mine. But, you know, it just feels really good just to say, I don't need words. I'm angry, and it is red and green, and I'm going to smear it all over that page until I don't have any more left in me. And what's so wonderful mm-hmm. about doing those kind of exercises is that we know when we're done for that moment. It's like, you know, you just keep going until it's like, that's it. You know, the hands are broken off, the energy within me. So, Lori, you just gave such wonderful, wonderful examples of the work that you've done. So, and are doing it too, you know. Those are such great tools for all of us.
Yeah, it certainly was helpful. And, you know, I'm still working on things, and it's, you know, it's probably always will be, but it's a lot better than it was, that's for sure. I'm glad to be this far along in my journey, that's for sure.
Well, you're doing fine, Lori. My God. I've said this, and I won't say it again. I was with Lori first, and then I came to Bill's show. She introduced me to Bill. And he's just so happy. Yes, he is. So anyway, you know, I gotta bust him. But anyway, I'm going to go to him next. But anyway, the point is, the inner child is always screaming, you know. And what's so important about what you just said, I can identify with both of you, to take the power back. You see, if we go around with all this anger, all right, which I don't have anymore. I mean, I do at times. I take that back. You know, I will get angry, but then I just, you know, I get over it. Whereas before I didn't. I would drink instead, or I'd pop pills, or I'd do both, or I'd do this, I'd do that. You know, we won't get into what I did. So anyway, the point is, then they're still in control. You see, they're still controlling your life. And then it's, you know, like I don't want to be one of those people that goes to their grave with all this anger and all this resentment and all the things that goes along with it, because then I will never have had a chance to live my life. You see, that's what happens.
Yes.
And too many people do that because they don't reach out for help. Or they don't work the programs, if they have to work programs, you know, like AA, if they're alcoholics. I'm an alcoholic. Bill's an alcoholic. I was also a drug addict alcoholic. Well, so was he. But, you know, the point is, if you don't work with positives in your life, if you don't reach out and get help, okay, whichever route it might be, okay, I don't care where people get help from, as long as they get the help that they need. Then and you harbor all of these feelings. The inner child wants to be loved. the inner child wants to be accepted. I mean, I took the ACE study test just the other day, just for the heck of it, and I'm a 9. And there's only 10, okay? I was in trouble, honey, okay? So, you know, I mean, I had all the things because I had gone, you know, they ask you questions, and I had to put a 9 down because all these things had happened to me. And it says, I think it's after 6, especially, it's going to take away from the length of time that you live your life. I think it was number 6. Mm-hmm. If you have 6 things wrong with you, or six things that you can identify with, yes, broken homes, verbal abuse, physical abuse that you have witnessed or have been part of, they ask you questions like that. And, mm-hmm. of course, I, along with so many other people, you know, would score very high. So if you don't get the help that you need throughout your life, then your life many times is shortened and you don't live a happy life. And that's unfortunate because, you see, the people who offended us then still have control, okay, over our lives. And then that's very upsetting. Okay, Bill, what do you think about all this? Yeah.
Wow, you guys have gone on and on and on. I don't know where to start. I will say this. I have never experienced much of what you'd call traditional therapies. Like, I've never seen a counselor over any extended period of time or anything like that. But I had a unique experience early in my life because I went to a prep school where I lived with the other kids in the prep school and, of course, with some adults who supervised us, and these were priests and brothers. And we were on the campus of a liberal arts college. All the priests and brothers were theologians, obviously, but they were also very involved in the psychology departments at the college. So they brought that into the high school experience too. And so we heard a lot about, you know, Jung and, I mean, all kinds of therapists and psychologists from the era, you know, prior to my going into high school. And then when I got to college, I was already pretty familiar with some of those. And, of course, the Christian psychology people, too, if you want to call it that, theologian / psychologist. When I went to college, I did not go to college there because I'd been abused in that school, so I did not want to continue on the same campus for my college experience, and I went to a secular school. But I fell in with a couple of people. One of them, my closest circle of friends was 3 males, one of whom was a Catholic priest, Father Bellier, one of whom was a doctoral student, I guess, or maybe he already had his doctorate, but he was younger, and another was an extremely bright guy, a couple of years older than me. So I was the youngest of the 4, but they fully accepted me into the circle. And a lot of the discussion was about psychology that's found in literature and also Gestalt psychology, because that was the specialty of the guy who had recently got his doctorate. So, and then across the street from us, Marshall McLuhan was talking about how the medium was the message right across the street. So, you know, I got a lot of early, study. Oh, I wasn't in class with these guys. We hung out together. We had basically like seminar workshops around, you know, lawn chairs, sitting outside the priest's little house they'd given to him. Anyway, the point is that I found my recovery in about 10 years later, maybe 12 years later, when I accepted the fact that I needed help for my drinking and using of drugs. And I went to Alcoholics Anonymous, as Carol has said, and most of my recovery is based on what I learned there. Now, all this other stuff, I didn't lose it. It's in my head. For example, I know in Gestalt therapy, they believe that, you know, everything that involves let's say you're dreaming, every portion of your dream is you, for example. Mm-hmm. You own all of the pieces, no matter whether it's your role or somebody else's role or an inanimate object or whatever. And I get that. I mean, you create, your subconsciousness creates all the imagery in your dreams. And they may be influenced by other experiences, but when you're dreaming, they're yours. So in AA, they taught me a process that included doing inventory. And within the first year of my own recovery, I did inventory and fifth steps and started on amends. The fourth step is the inventory step, and the first one they recommend is a resentment inventory. And the second one they recommend is a fear inventory. Frankly, what you find out in a resentment inventory is where you've done things that have caused you to have the feelings that you're having. It's, you're supposed to, obviously, you have resentments against a person or a principle or a situation or something like that, yeah. But you have reacted to those, and you have to own the reaction. Most of the time, it's fear-based. You're afraid of financial insecurity. You're afraid of not looking good enough. You're afraid of not measuring up or whatever. You're afraid of your sexual identity. You're afraid of fear, 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 fear. That's why the second inventory they recommend is fear. And ultimately, when you're doing the fear inventory, which I think you come to understand, is that fear is an expression, anger is an expression of fear. So, you know, these things are all intertwined, and I have, you know, continued to take inventory. I still do it. I'm not fear-free. I'm not anxiety-free by any means. I think ultimately, though, most of the expressions that sound like anger that come out of me are a result of being frustrated. And that means I go back to the first step. First step being that I think I have some kind of power, and I don't. And the first step is an admission of no power over any person, place, thing, or situation, is the way I read it. And my life is unmanageable according to the way I want it to necessarily to be in order to be happy. I read those sort of sentiments into the first step. But, you know, when you say you're powerless over the perpetrator. You're powerless over the situation. You're powerless over, oh, in my case, where I went to high school, where I was abused, or the camp before high school, where I was abused. And I'm powerless that those experiences are inside of me. So what I got to do is, you know, they call it surrendering. You got to give up, you know, from giving, give up the illusion that you can control those things. You can't. But, of course, in the way I practice my 12-step program, I have a, we call it a higher power. There's a source that is available to us if we turn to it that's outside ourselves, that is more powerful or bigger than us, who, while we admit that we can't necessarily handle our problems, that source can, if we acknowledge it and turn towards it and listen for the answers. So this is where my recovery comes from. It's not really, I never did any inner child work, you know, for example. And I never went to any quote, legitimate, unquote, counseling. So I went to a few, you know, a couple here and a couple there, but I never stuck with the counselor for any period of time. Maybe I went to a couple of marriage counseling sessions with my first wife, and that failed, you know. But I never had a long-term relationship or took on direction from a counselor, because I had that all around me all the time. Because one of the things you got to do, I think, is somebody mentioned you either implode or explode. Well, those things are fixable by using the tools that were given to me. And we have them here at NASCA, too, by allowing the feelings out. I mean, the problem is really holding on to them. The solution is letting go of them. So that's why telling your story is really important. That's why having a list of phone numbers to call is really important. That's why having people to say, well, I'm not telling you what to do, but I suggest you try this because it worked for me. That's not being told what to do, but having people say, I've done this and it worked, and then I come to my own conclusion, well, maybe I should at least try it. And son of a gun, it works too, you know. So these are all ingredients in where my recovery comes from, and they are really not sort of formal. But I have recognized recently that most of my being upset, and I've expressed this on the show, being upset, comes down to being frustrated. And that's all the way back to the first step. It's me wishing I had more control over the results of the stuff that I do. And I simply don't have it. So anyway, hope that helps fill in a gap there where I was being quiet.
Those are such gifts too, I think. I've often thought that real power is realizing that you don't have power, right? Because, you know, we don't.
Exactly.
And we have, and that's where the real power is. And that, and the other point I really appreciated, and of course I love what you said about Gestalt therapy, because I did a lot of training in Gestalt therapy and so on, but is that recovery is a stew, I think, for all of us. You know, I mean, you know, you were talking about, you know, your history with the ways that you learned, and you were always surrounded by it. And when you said something, Bill, about not having a long-term association with someone or a counselor or something, but you have long-time association with AA and certainly a long-time association with psychology. You know, it comes in so many different forms, and you certainly were drinking from the fountain, you know, when you were very young and learning some important things, and certainly about ownership, because you're right, Gestalt therapy and the dream work, that's all the different aspects of ourselves, and that's what inner child work is too, by the way. It's, you know, and I look at it as inner children work, because I have, you know, we all have, you know, these inner children inside of us that have been wounded or adults or whatever, and I have named mine, and I honor them, and I, you know, it sounds a little crazy, but it's really putting focus on the healing of those different aspects. And my healing started, I think I was 16. I didn't even know there was any issue because I was such a good child and I didn't act out. So I thought, I am handling life really well. Look at this. You know, I'm doing well in school. There's no issues. I'm not doing drugs. I'm not drinking. I'm not, you know, sleeping with boys. So I must be having a handle, until my friends at the age of 16 did an intervention for me. And the intervention was, I grew up in Santa Cruz, which is a beach resort town, and they drove me up, I'll never forget this, up into the mountains, and my friend had a red convertible, and there were two friends in the front, one in the back with me, and they stopped the car, and they all turned around and faced me and told me that they were worried about me. Now, I looked at my friends, who I thought were, you know, they were party people and so on, and I thought, why would they be worried about me? And they were worried about me, and this kind of ties into what you were talking about, Bill, because of how fearful I was. I was so fearful of doing anything wrong. I was so fearful I would say no to everything. And they said, we think there's something wrong with you. You know, well, we're getting in the car and driving to the football game instead of going in the bus. But you always say no, and you just act a little weird. And they were wondering why, I wasn't being, quote, normal. And the truth is, I remember that night thinking, I don't know what they're talking about, but I remember going home, and they drove me home and thinking about it, and I thought, that's true. I was so afraid of calling any negative attention to me at home, because negative attention would call attention, the big word, to me, and something might happen. So my way of coping is that imploding versus exploding was not to be out there and be really visible, because I didn't want to bring any kind of negative attention to me, because then something, I might be sexually abused again. Somebody might remember I'm there, right? So it's interesting what can trigger our journey into self-exploration and obviously the healing and then the empowerment that you've all been talking about. So we all get initiated in different ways, I think, on this process. And I think it's fascinating to learn about different ways of how we start our process. And for some, it's like you were talking about, Carol, it was about acting out and so on, and mine was about acting in, thinking as long as I could be as perfect as I could be, I would be safe. You know, but it was all fear-based, wasn't it? I mean, it was dealing with some feelings that it wasn't healthy until I crashed and I couldn't get up and I couldn't be perfect. And I had a dear friend who had been abused and watched what happened. I went through a really severe 9-month depression when I was in my mid-20s. And she said to me one day, sitting there, do you think this could have anything to do with your abuse? And I'm going, no, I handled that a long time ago. And she said, then why are you on the couch? And why aren't you able to walk? Or why can you not stop crying? And so she literally took me to therapy. And she said, I'm going to make an appointment, and called me an appointment. And it was the greatest gift I've ever been given, because that's what started my own healing journey. So we've all been through it, and we all are sitting here saying it goes on, and it's hopeful. You can go through it and come out the other side with some strength, and we can break those hands, right? And we can take back our power and take our rightful place. And anger does keep us connected to the perpetrator, so that's one of the reasons I really stress that everybody does do whatever they can to work through their anger, because it keeps us connected. And what we want to do is to break that connection and stand on our own 2 feet. So,
right.
I guess I have a lot to say as well. So thank you all.
Mm-hmm. Well, we will have our stories. You know, we will have all our own stories. Go ahead.
Let me just conclude with one thought, Carol, because she was responding to what I said, and that is that the most significant part of my recovery hasn't been in admitting that I'm powerless, nor in doing inventory and sharing it with my sponsor. It's been in making amends. It's in the process of doing your inventory, you discover a list of things or people who you've done things you're not proud of, you know, who you've hurt. Sometimes it's out of the pain they caused you, no question. But still, that doesn't give a person the right to lash out. See, that's what I'm saying. And so I have had to make amends to certain people and situations that I wish I didn't have to, but I'm doing it because, just what you said, it frees me. It frees me to apologize for whatever role I played. Usually it was after the fact, whatever they did to me, but I wasn't there to discuss what they did to me. I was there to discuss what I might have done in retaliation. And when I asked for acknowledgement of how I'd been, when I acknowledged that I'd been wrong and asked for them to understand it, not necessarily forgive it, some of them did, some didn't. But I did my work by showing up to relieve myself of the resentment. However it was taken, I mean, I tried to do it honestly in each case. And there were some people who I did not make amends to, obviously. I mean, it said, the step reads that you make amends to these people except when to do so would injure them or others. And there are situations where you don't make amends because it's going to either hurt them or you to make the amends, so you don't. But you hold yourself in readiness if there should become an opportunity to do that later. And the point is that it was in the doing of the ninth step that I experienced what we call the promises in the 12-step programs, and they are fantastic. The set of promises is unbelievable. What happens to you when you diligently do this work? Now, you get so much freedom, and it says you'll actually start to experience it before you're halfway through. You're making your amends, and that was true for me. I still have amends to do, but I've honestly done as many as I could that weren't going to hurt myself or others, and I'm willing to do more if that situation presents itself, and that's where the miracle occurred for me. Not in the first step, not in the inventory,
not in the sharing the inventory with my sponsor in a fifth step, and not in the making of the list of people I owed amends to, but in the actual, about halfway through making my amends, I started to really deeply experience a certain number of freedoms that are in the big book are written out in a beautiful way, and they do happen, and they did for me. So that's my final thought, Carol. Thanks for letting me express it.
No, that's fine. That's fine. You see, we all have to find our own healing, okay? Now, I had counselors working with me. That was from a church group. I actually had a good Catholic church. Holy crow. And it was huge. Yeah, I know. It was huge. And the prayer group was huge. And these people pulled me off the street, pulled me in. Said, you're a mess. And I said, yes, I am. I knew I was a mess. So the point is, they worked with me. There were counselors there. But one of the things that I had to do, if I was going, they didn't charge me, none of that other stuff, you know. But they insisted that I go to AA, okay? I didn't want to go to AA. I didn't have that desire to go to AA. And
nobody does.
No. I know. Well, I was still drinking a little bit. I had cut way down.
So was I.
This is what we do. This is what we do.
Nobody goes to AA. Nobody shows up going, wow, this is great. I'm so glad I made it here. And I haven't had a drink in a month, you know? That's not
I hear you. I hear you. But that's true.
That's true.
But, you know, like I was really humiliated to go to AA. Okay.
Oh yeah.
Because I had already started, and I'll tell you why. No, because Billy, I think you might remember way back when, I had already started in the field of social services, so I didn't want people to know that I was going to AA. So I would go two or three towns away, okay, to go to AA meetings because I didn't want people to see me. I mean, I was embarrassed. And I was also mad because I didn't want to stop drinking. But my fingers were swollen and my kidneys were pounding. And I had to think to myself, you know, you're going to die. Because I've been drinking for a long time, you know. And I started when I was a kid. But I also wanted the help from the counselors because I needed, you know, to be with them. I needed help. So I had to listen. And finally, they just said, okay, Carol, you're not getting anything of what you need. I'm going to change this before Bill, you know, says something. You're not getting what you need, you know, from AA. Let's try something else. And they gave me a battery of tests. And they told me, for God's sake, you're brilliant. And I thought, my God, how smart they are, okay? I'm not crazy. I'm brilliant. And they're saying so. They're smart. I like these people. You know? So, but, you know, they helped me throughout the course of for several months. But they did want me to continue counseling off and on as I needed it, you know, because, I mean, you know, some time had gone by and I saw them and they helped me. And they got me actually started, you know, working with the type of work that I worked with. Okay. That was the first thing was the Rahway Lifers program, Scared Straight, but that was volunteer, and that was okay. I needed something on a resume because I had been working at a dime store. There's nothing wrong with that. Don't get me wrong. I was eating all the malted balls, and they got mad at me in the candy section. Don't put me by a candy section. I'm a kid. You know what I'm saying? So they put me down by Staples. They figured I wouldn't eat the Staples, would I? They were very smart. So, but the point is, you know, they got me started. They got me started into what I was doing. And the dime store was a while back, and I had other jobs after that because they gave me confidence. They helped me find confidence in myself because we as survivors, we have such low self-esteem, you know, until we get on our healing journeys and we find out, you know, things. And, you know, there's all kinds of things that we do negative. We do negative type of behavior patterns because we don't like ourselves, because we've been told all our lives that we were stupid or we were this or we were that, and we'd never amount to anything. So I had the right counselors from this church group. I was very lucky, and they got me involved, and they knew how to counsel me, and my life went on from there. I started in the 70s working in social services, and I ended in the 90s. And then I became, like I said, a landlady. So I put my time in. I had quite a few jobs in there because I had to take care of my children. And you see, this goes to relationships, right?
Mm.
So often those of us who have been abused, what do? We choose poorly, you know. And I thought my first husband, who was the father of my children, our children, I thought he was wonderful. He was a biker. I liked bikes. He drank. I drank. I mean, come on. I thought, hey, he looked like a movie star. I mean, he was so gorgeous. I thought I died and went to heaven, okay? And naughty, naughty, naughty. Now, this is what we have to watch out for because a lot of us have this problem. He was very, you know, came from a very dysfunctional home, too. But he was a charmer, okay? And when people are charming, too charming, you have to watch out for. He would pull a chair out for me. He would take me to Sardi's in New York City because I'm a New Yorker. I love Sardi's, the idea of it. Maybe I'd see a movie star. And he would open the car door for me. This is nice. Don't get me wrong. But there was too much of it. And then, you know, he got drafted, and I was pregnant. And I didn't care because I was engaged to him. We were going to get married anyway. But when he came home from the service, I saw the real person. Holy crow. And he was not the guy that was going to pull a chair out anymore. He was the guy that was going to hit me in the head with the chair, okay? You know, it did flip-flop. And, you know, so we don't know how to choose because if we're brought up in domestic violence, of course, this is Domestic Violence Month. This is what we come to know. We don't consider, maybe we don't consider it normal, but we accept it. And then what happens is we don't see the flags, the red flags, okay, that I should have seen and many of us should see before we go into a relationship. Had I seen that, he was very sarcastic. And my friends would say to me, Carol, he's so sarcastic. Why do you take it? Even though he'd pull out the chair for me and tell me how pretty I am and all these other things, all these things that I wanted and needed to hear, he was sarcastic too. I didn't see, my mind was pushing that aside because when we grow up in domestic violence situations, we push it aside. We can't, like Bill said, we have no control over that. We're just kids, okay? So you come to not accept it exactly, but it's a way of life. And you just don't see those red flags. You just don't see them. So what happens is then we have trouble with relationships, and as time goes by, we learn to be able to spot, hopefully anyway, the red flags. And you learn to step back and look at the situation, step back and look at the person and think to yourself, well, do I want to get involved really with this person? What are their good qualities? What are their bad qualities? And sure, I had to do self-inventory. I did that, Bill. I went to a certain point with AA. And I changed what I could change. I did not ask the people who abused me. You know, I didn't talk to them because I knew that I would never get, I'm sorry from you. Whether it was family members, outside people, sexual abuse both with me on inside, outside, you know, husbands who were abusive in their manner and their behavior. I knew I was never going to get an I'm sorry from them, okay?
That's never the point of making amends.
But this was for me, though, Bill, okay?
Okay.
So I'm not a perfect person. We all know this. And but so I change my ways. That's what I can do. I can change me, but I can't
right.
change my spouse or my lover or whomever. I can't do that. We just hope that as we go along in life on our healing journey that we're able to spot those red flags and we're able to keep ourselves in check. I mean, I always do self-evaluation of myself. I look at myself. And, you know, am I doing things okay? And I don't consider that a bad thing to do because sometimes I am wrong, okay? And that's okay. You see, I've learned to say, hey, I made a mistake and that's okay. And whether it be relationships or whatever. But we have to learn to get smarter and we have to, yes, forgive ourselves. And that inner child that we speak about still is always constantly needing a little bit of help. You know, hey, okay, you went through this. This is what caused that. And it's wonderful. I read that book. Was that Bernard Shaw? Is that the Lori? Is that the right one? I don't know.
Yeah.
Forget the name. Yeah, Bernard Shaw. Yeah, and about the inner child, and came to an understanding.
John Bradshaw.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I knew it didn't sound quite right. Yeah, but I read it and I came to a better understanding of that child inside. You know that's crying, and why that child is crying, and what can I do to make that child feel better. So, unfortunately, not enough people know about the inner child, and I think probably in your workshop book, I don't know, but in other books like that. Yeah, you speak about the inner child, and that is so important. Yeah.
Yes, there is a lot about the inner child, and one of the reasons to work on healing that inner child is because then oftentimes the inner child in us chooses our partner, like you were talking about, because I think oftentimes we choose today's relationships from our past experiences. You know, we choose relationships oftentimes that help us to complete unfinished business that we had. And so that we can learn to, as you mentioned, Carol, so well about looking for the red flags, that those red flags are often our unfinished business. We're often unconsciously attracted to that. You know, there's something about it that's familiar. There's something about it that kind of mesmerizes us, right? It's even more than love that pulls us to there. And, you know, sometimes it's for obviously a positive unfolding, and sometimes it's really to learn about our own worth, to learn how to set boundaries, to learn how to make choices that really serve us, right? And it can be very difficult. I think that many people who have been abused and gone through abuse have certainly chosen out of that unhealed part of themselves. And that's another good reason to do the work that we need to work. And to ask ourselves, what is that about this that pulled me? You know, how is this serving me? What is it that I need to learn? So often with abuse, it is about that setting boundaries and valuing ourselves and not being passive or not being irrational, right? And being able to really take care of ourselves. Because the bottom line is for that inner child inside who was not taken care of and in fact was used and abused, we have to learn how to take care of her or him and to only let him be in places that are safe and secure and non-abusive. And so I'm really glad you brought up. I think that's such a good thing. And I want to say something too about, we just had recently a family member who came and made amends to us. And I have to tell you, as somebody sitting and hearing that, it was one of the most powerful experiences I've ever had. I know it was certainly powerful for her, but for me to sit here listening to somebody who so sincerely and so deeply was feeling what she was shared with us and was so willing at a point in her life to embrace and be accountable for her actions was just so powerful. What a gift. A gift that is for those of us too that hear those amends. Oh my word, you know. It's just beautiful. So, you know, thank you to everybody who has, you know, certainly done that for themselves and for their own healing. And I have not had a struggle with addiction, at least not that kind of addiction. But I've also done the steps because of value. Oh, my God. And I have gone and done amends and so on. But I haven't not heard it back for a while. And that was, it was just very, very powerful. Very powerful.
Mm-hmm. Very, very powerful, yeah.
We all heal. All parts of those relationships heal when somebody is being real and sincere and accountable in the moment, right? And then we can meet them where they are and hopefully where we are. And then, you know, then love happens, you know? Love happens. Our heart opens. It's
mm-hmm.
wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's funny because in relationships, you know, when you've noticed, I'm sure you've seen it many times, when a person has been abused too much, you know, I don't mean too much, when they've been abused, period, you know, I do these things. But anyway, they have a certain way of it's behavioral. Like, if a person is constantly saying, I'm sorry, they think they're doing something wrong constantly. Oh, excuse me, I'm sorry, forgive me. Well, that person many times, more often than not, has come from an abusive relationship where they're so jacked up, okay? I like to use the word jacked up in the sense that because they're like every nerve cell in their body, everything, they're like, you know, like tightened and scared and all this other stuff that they're going to do something wrong because they were told all their life that they were doing things wrong, you see? And so then they just have all these feelings that they have to deal with. And it's... many times I've noticed, like with teenagers, you know, if they get into abusive relationships with their boyfriends, okay, they get into those relationships, and they allow for their boyfriends to hit them or to demean them in some way, one way or another. Maybe it's verbal more than physical, or maybe it's both. And they have a hard time getting out of those relationships because that is, again, what they grew up with. That's what they knew. And it's very, very difficult then. And that's why we have so many women. Now, we're speaking about women now, not children. You know, they're in abusive relationships and they're afraid to, they're leaving. How am I going to leave? What am I going to do? Maybe they don't have the money. I know in my first marriage, my husband wouldn't let me work. He said, the boys are going to look at you. The guys are going to look at you. The guys are going to look at you. And we only had one car. So I had to stay home. I couldn't help financially. And my children suffered. I suffered. And I found out later on that he was also he was a gambler, too. I didn't know that. I thought he was just a drinker. But oh, no, he was a gambler, too. All right. So, you know, he'd throw me like a buck or something and say, go to the thrift shop. And I'm not, you know, down into thrift shops, but this is how my kids had to live. Go to the thrift shops and get yourselves some clothing. And in those days, you could with a buck, all right? So, but my kids were made fun of in school because, you know, they didn't, nothing was in style. It was different, whatever. And it was very sad, and I felt so bad for them. And I came from a wealthy family, Sharon. So finally, I went to my mother, and I said, look, my kids are being abused. She wasn't going to help me. She hated me. That's okay. It's a different story. But we put the kids then in Catholic school because then we had to only worry about uniforms, and my mother bought the uniforms. You didn't have to worry about styles and all this other stuff, you know. But my kids grew up with terrible complexes, because they were, you know, made fun of in school, so they had their own set of things that they had to deal with, you know, in life, and the feelings of being inadequate or less than, well, same thing. You know, the point is they had bad feelings. So whatever the trauma is, whether it be bullying in school or whether it be, you know, in the home, you see all this terrible domestic violence and all the things they have to grow up and wonder if you're going to be hit next. Are you going to be the next one? What's going to happen, you know? Is mommy going to die tonight? Lori and I have so many things in common with that. You know, all these things that you grow up with. And then that does certainly hurt the mind cell so that you can't reason right. You don't know. You may think you know right from wrong, and yet it doesn't change your behavior as to whom you choose, okay, as to who is the right partner for you and so forth. I've gotten to the point in my life, what I want is I've had five guys ask me out recently. That's very nice, and I turned them all down. In fact, I put my wedding ring back on. I didn't want any part of them. I'm thinking to myself, you know, a part of me wants to have relationships, absolutely, And then there's another part of me, because my second husband has passed away, Sharon, 3 years ago, so I'm certainly due to go out if I want to. But the point is this. I'm scared, okay? I don't want, a guy living with me. I'm going to put it right out there. That's the way I am. Bill knows this. I want my house. He can have his house. I want to see him maybe a few times a month, maybe 4 times a month. That's nice if it came to that. And we do our things, go out, have dinner, or maybe I'll cook dinner at home. I like to do that. I love to cook if I have someone to cook for. Watch movies and so forth and so on. And that's lovely. But I don't want to get into a relationship where I'm in that relationship, stuck in that relationship, a part of that, where I've made a commitment. That's the word I'm looking for. No. Not anymore. Mm-mm.
Well, now you have the opportunity to commit to however you want it to be. You get to define the dance, right? You get to define the dance. So
well,
if it's four times a month or whatever, you get to define it. That's your commitment.
That's true. This is the way I feel about it, And I was married for 37 years to my second husband. My first husband was 13 years. Heck, I've been married all my life. Okay, just you know what I'm saying? And because
yes.
I got married when I was 19, So the point is that now I can spread my wings. I can go to bed when I want. I can eat what I want. I can do any. If I want to dance around the house, I can dance. I love to sing.
Yes.
My neighbors think I'm nuts. I don't care. This is fine. I turn Alexa on. I say, Alexa, play this group, play that group. But I'm having a good time. I am free. I'm free.
Yes.
And it's a good feeling for me. Not everyone's the same, but it's a good feeling for me. So, Lori, what do you think about all of this?
Well, I think it's
great.
We only have
3 minutes.
Oh,
my God.
That you're free.
Right.
It's been a good show, and I've really enjoyed being part of the panel. Absolutely.
Well, I'm so thankful that you're here, and I always love Lori. We know this. And, and Sharon, wonderful. I know. Mm-hmm. And Sharon, and I even love Bill, by God. There you go. But anyway, look, it was the four of us. We had a good time. We got a lot of knowledge out there. I believe we educate people by conversations, just like what we had tonight. And we could talk for another 2 hours, especially me. I have a big mouth, So this is what we do. But a lot of good comes from conversations like this. And people feel free to call in, because we're here to help you. We're here to support you. We've all gone through trauma. And, feel free to call in anytime. And, I'm on the contact list. And I will talk to you for 2 hours if you need it. Because that's what I do. So, anyway, this show is basically over. So, Bill, do you want to have any final words?
No, just thanks for a good show.
It was a good show. Yes, it was. And, tomorrow night we're going to have another good show. Tomorrow's Wednesday, so on Wednesdays people come on and they tell their stories. That's what they do. And they trust us enough at NASCA to do that. And they become family members then, as we call it, NASCA family members. And we're here for you, and they can give to us, our guests many times, our very skilled
Michael
people.
Michael Skinner.
And we learn a lot from
Michael Skinner is our, many of us know
I
Michael
love
Skinner.
Michael.
And he'll,
yes.
Many of us know Michael Skinner, and Michael will be our special guest tomorrow night. He's appeared a number of times at NASCA, but not in the last few years. So I'm really excited to have him. He's, of course, an advocate and a musician of some note. And he writes a newsletter that's worth getting. Michael Skinner, our guest tomorrow night.
Yes. And he sent me an email. He hopes I'll be on the show. Michael, I will be here. I will be here. I'm getting better now. So anyway, okay, thank you so much, everyone, for showing up, for being here. Every people out there who listened, I hope that we were helpful. And we'll see you again tomorrow. So God bless. Stay safe. Goodbye for now.
Bye bye now.
Good night, everybody.
Okay, honey. 'Cause that dawn will come. You are forgotten after all that you've done.
Blog Talk Radio.
Okay.